So we're back with Representative Reginald Meeks. We are at Frankfort, Kentucky on the 11th of June, around 12:30, to continue his oral history interview. When we spoke before, you were talking about your Anishinaabe family and the way that they bring members into their families and into their tribe. Tell me more about that.
Most nations that I'm aware of have a ceremony. I'm sure the difference is the bottom line of the ceremony is making relations, and it's where a tribe will bring in someone to become a member of that tribe, making relatives. Oftentimes it's done to replace someone who has passed away. I don't know all the details, but I do know that it's done to help grow the family, to sustain the tribe. It's done to replace individuals as family members when they have passed on with family members. And I think it started, I don't know, I couldn't tell you when it actually started, but I know it's been something that's gone on for generations. And I was part of that in terms of being brought into the Anishinaabe Nation. And as an adoptee, there's really no distinction between someone who is adopted or someone who is born. Mm-hmm. You're all family, and you're seen as family. And it was an honor, of course, to be brought into the tribe.
Tell me, you said that you have the land that you all have in Tennessee is family land that's been in the family for generations.
Yes.
And that you learned about some of your Cherokee heritage growing up there, or at least visiting there. Tell me about that.
From what I understand, Bradley County is in the heart of Cherokee land. Bradley County is southeastern Tennessee, southeastern Tennessee. Geographically, it's right off of, or the county is on both sides of Interstate 75, right above Chattanooga.
Okay.
My mother is from Cleveland, Tennessee, and Bradley County is very close to what is now known as the Cherokee Reservation, which is actually across the state line in North Carolina, but back in the day that wasn't there. And so our family, particularly my father and his family, his parents, would be my great-great-grandfather on his side, were noted hunters in that area. The family land that we're on now is actually about maybe 60 or 70 miles north of Cleveland, in Roane County. And it's right, we say Loudoun, Tennessee, but Loudoun is just the closest town, and it's probably 25 miles away. The actual closest town is what used to be an Indian village or Indian town called Paint Rock. And our family land is around there. Apparently, my great-grandfather, my great-great-grandfather, either worked for, it's always, we've always said worked for. We don't know if he was a slave or not. He took the name Kline, K-L-I-N-E, because that's where, that's the farm, the land that the person, the family that owned it, they were Klines. Apparently they were Jewish. And so Kline became part of our family name. And in fact, my middle name is Kline. So it's, that's part of the family legacy there. This Indian village, this Indian community, if you will, of those who did, that was composed primarily of individuals who did not go west, stayed in the mountains, stayed in eastern Tennessee. My family became very connected with this Indian village in Paint Rock. And so this is where our Indian blood on my, it'd be my great-great-grandfather's, you know, he was probably the one that started it, I guess. On my mother's side, my mother's mother is from Pulaski, Tennessee. And we're in the process of having DNA swabs done of our family elders. So we think that that's going to help us to narrow down the picture. But the bottom line is our family from both Cleveland and in Loudoun, Tennessee, I say Loudoun, Paint Rock, were intermixed with the tribal members who stayed on the eastern side of this split between the nation, those who stayed east and those who went west.
Tell me about, you said that you all would be out in the woods and that you would learn from your family about your Cherokee heritage. How did that happen? Were there stories? Ways of doing things?
It was, we didn't know any differently. And so it was simply the way we were brought up, the way my parents were brought up, my mother particularly. She hunted with my grandfather, and he apparently was continuing a tradition that had been in the family from, you know, since before anybody knew. But a lot of the knowledge that we learned directly from my mother came directly from her father, who was known throughout eastern part of Tennessee as being someone who was apparently a very skilled outdoorsman, a very noted hunter. It seems from the stories I've been told that people from all around the county would come to him and want to hunt with him, and that he and apparently his brothers, who would be my great great grands, and his family were intermixed with the tribe. There are stories of canoe trips, boat trips back and forth across the Tennessee River. In Paint Rock, Paint Rock is the community that our relatives are from, probably no more than 2 miles from the Tennessee River. So it's the stories of travel back and forth across the Tennessee River to visit the Indian village by the boys in the family were commonplace. And my mother, the stories that she picked up, have passed those stories on to us. Mm-hmm. Those stories are complemented or supplemented by stories from my aunts, who of course grew up with my mother, and shared different experiences with my grandfather and other uncles and all.
So there was an overt obvious connection with the Native community is that it's part of us and we're part of it.
There's been no separation in my family from what I know. I mean, as long as I've known, there are family photographs of my Aunt Pinky, who lived in Paint Rock in Brown County, and she's wearing moccasins and long dresses. And apparently they were living in a log house at the time. I do know that my mother was raised in a log cabin in Bradley County, which is where much of the hunting stories came from my grandfather.
Were there other kind of traditional activities that there are stories about other than hunting? In the travel back and forth, were there stories of ceremony or gatherings?
Stories of gatherings, but as a kid, it's not necessarily explained.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that my mother is a skilled woodsman or woodswoman. and she would oftentimes, when we would be in the fields, point out trees or plants and how they're used, how they used them at the time. She would tell us stories of caves in the area that they used to play in when they were kids.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally we would sneak and go try to find them. He didn't do much good. but these things were passed down to us. Not necessarily, sit down, I got a story to tell you. But just as you were hiking to the river to go fishing, stories that got told along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Paint Rock is connected to the town by what at the time was a gravel road, and we spent all kind of hours running up and down the gravel road, a road that at the time looked so big. We travel on it now and it's like, whoa. why don't they do something to widen this road? But yeah, but family gatherings. There's a church in the community that all the families from the area go to, and there would be gatherings at the church and events at the church, and it was a time for kids to we thought of it as just coming together to play primarily, but those were times when the elders, the older people in the community would talk to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we maintain, thankfully, we maintain a family tradition of having reunions, family reunions, and those are joyful occasions when the elders and the kids are able to sit and talk, and the kids are able to, work out their own kinds of relationships within the family.
Mm-hmm.
And
tell me about those stories that you learned. Where are they going now? How are you passing those along to your family? Are you passing them only to family members or outside family members or outside folks? Are they learning them from the reunions, like you said? Separate stories, their own new stories?
I think that that's probably a combination of things. I tend to be somewhat restrictive in terms of who and where those things I share. My daughter, being the modern woman that she is, I don't always feel that she's listening or that she gets what I'm trying to tell. But the elders always tell me that you always talk to them. You continue to share with them because even though they may not appear to be listening, they do listen. And I know that she listens well because, you know, she's shown that on many occasions. I think now my focus is more two things. My granddaughter, who's only 4 years old, but has a definite reaction, positive reaction to being, you know, around anything related to Native people. Mm-hmm. You know, she hears the music and she hears the drum and she's been in the circle dancing and she asks about things. Mm-hmm. She inquires about things and I share with her. There are things that have been passed on to me that I'm probably very uncomfortable sharing with very many people. I mentioned to you that George Fairbanks, Joe Bush, was the spiritual elder there at the White Earth Reservation. And I've seen that man do he was a very special man. He had a lot of power. And he encouraged me to do some things and to explore the powers that rest. You know, I guess all of us have those powers to some extent. And so I've participated in ceremonies and that I tend to probably keep to myself or share with those who I know have also gone through those same ceremonies. I do know that Native people traditionally have been very open and giving and sharing with others who have come into their circles. And I guess from my vantage point, I feel almost like it has been more a disservice than it has been an advantage. And I know that's not the way that I should be thinking of these things, and I have to keep myself in check because Native people are a very open and giving people. But I've seen far too often times when that openness has been turned back on them in negative ways. I'm probably, you know, a heretic, I guess. But there's an awful lot of power in nature, and Native people being very connected to the land have had, I think, the benefit of being exposed to that power and have understood how to incorporate that power in our daily lives. And unfortunately, modern society has removed us from that in a lot of ways. You know, there's stories of people in Tennessee when it was time to, when they were forcibly removed, you know, would actually be clinging to the trees because of, you know, of not being wanting to be separated from. And when I'm in the woods and I hear the trees talking and I hear all of this communication going on, you know, I guess some people would say, must be nuts. But there's a definite connection that we all share We share it with the trees, we share it with the animals and the rocks and the grasses and the wind. And it is as real and as palatable as this book on the table here in front of us. It is as real as the sun. And we have a responsibility to get reconnected to that, I think, because this mother that bore us all, is hurting, and it's a real responsibility that I feel that we all have.
So how do you balance the work that you do at U of L and the work that you do here at the Capitol with that part of you?
Probably pretty poorly. We're told that sage, which is a plant that has some very amazing properties to it. It heals. It protects. It's probably gonna sound crazy. I oftentimes have sage on me when I'm here. I was told that I should keep sage around me. Oftentimes you'll find Native people will have sage in their shoes because that is seen as a way of protecting us on this travel. I sometimes will burn sage here in the office. Mm-hmm. I've got sage here, and I've got a little turtle shell that I burn it in. Mm-hmm. And it works. Mm-hmm. It works. And so that's something that I do. A pipe was passed down to me, and being a pipe carrier has some responsibilities that come with it, and I carry that burden or that responsibility with me. I often travel. When I travel, I often have my pipe with me. Mm-hmm. And I'm told that if and when someone from the community needs that blessing, that I have a responsibility to go. And I have done that, and I will do that if ever called upon, or whenever called upon, I'll say. These are ways that help me to walk in different worlds at the same time, and that's a challenge. I think that whether you're African American, whether you're Native American, much less being both, you do learn to walk in two different worlds at the same time. Much like, African Americans can speak the King's English, when they're in the office, and then and just be slanging it, as soon as they walk out of the office and go back into their own home communities. I have Native friends who have to always be aware professionally that they are seen as Indian, regardless of what their degree status is. The first thing they are judged by is the way they are seen, and that's a reality that we all face. Nobody's going to look at you and know that you've got a law degree or a doctorate or you're a PhD candidate or anything. But they're going to know you're Black. They're going to know you're African American. They're going to know you're Native American. They're going to know you're brown, you know. And because this country is so hung up on color, and it's so hung up on race, and it's so hung up on these issues that we certainly have no control over. And this country has not resolved some issues that it must resolve if it's going to survive. We face that every day, and we face it in some unique ways. And I think Native people, African American people, women, you know, we learn to handle that, learn to adjust to that. Or we don't, you know. There's some family members who are very bitter, who, you know, who have basically dropped out because, you know, rather than it being a motivating factor, it's been a millstone. Or, you know, there are other issues that have come up, and you find ways to escape so that you don't have to deal with that every day. And I understand that.
Do you ever have to choose one over another in a particular context where you're one or the other, you're not both?
Do I?
Do people?
I can't speak for anybody else, but there's no choice. You know, I am all of that and more. So when I'm when I'm in a totally Black community and I'm playing my powwow tapes, I'm playing them just as loud as the next person who's bumping rap next to me in the next car. Mm-hmm. You know, and more often than not, people, you know, if I'm wearing something that's beaded or, you know, some jewelry or something, more often than not, it's accepted, and people want to know more about it, you know, rather than criticism. I think I get more visceral response from people who, you know, when I'm in the larger community and the larger population, and you know, people don't know what to think of you, and it's real obvious when they quicken their step, or they hug their purse to them a little closer, or, you know, you go to pass them in the car and they zoom up and speed up so you can't pass them, or, you know, some stupid stuff that people do. But no, I could not separate, and I do not.
In the Native community, do you get the same reaction as you do, say, in your local community in Louisville, where you're playing your powwow tapes in the Native community? Do you get the same reaction as when you're not? You see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. When I first started going to...
Is this guy trying to be... I mean, you know.
Yeah.
That topic.
No, I found, particularly among young Native people. I mean, I go home to Minnesota and I'm hearing rap music that I never heard when I was here, and I'm like, who is that? You know, I think that people of color are much more cosmopolitan than we're given credit for. We're much more accepting of other cultures and other blending of other, and finding that which is cool, however you define that, mm-hmm. in other people. You know, finding that which I can relate to. And I think that's why people of color, when we come together, you know, there are always exceptions, but generally people look for the very best. They look for the things they can relate to. They share the music, they share the food and the cooking and the stories and the dress. And, you know, it's a... we really need to be careful, I think, because there are forces out there that are much more interested in keeping us apart and keeping people separated based upon something artificial like color or race or politics or gender or something that some construct that they can control, you know, to keep people from just being people. And you know, they they write about, or they might tacitly acknowledge how this world would have been quite different had, you know, had, for instance, Columbus, you know, when he came to this quote new world, he didn't have to ask for anything. They gave him what he wanted. Anything they had, it was yours. Hey, what's up? And it was only when the greed of, give me the gold, I know you have it, give it to me. It was only when that greed of monetary gain or political power, or, you know, this land is now belongs to the king or the queen of, you name it, you know, how you gonna come over here and claim this land and belongs to somebody that doesn't even know it, that the land is here? You know, and because of history being his story, he writes it, and so history becomes what it, you know, what you say it is. But had that acceptance of life and the respect that was naturally given, had a different worldview taken shape. You know, at those critical times when people come together, you know, this world would be very different from what it is now. But we're locked in now. We're locked into these constructs. We're locked into these labels. We're locked into this way of thinking. We're locked into, you know, things are supposed to be this way. You know, and when you question, you become outside of the norm. I mean, well, why does it have to be that way? You know, people look at you like you know.
It's always been that way.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, exactly. And they can't imagine it not being that way. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I'm that's probably way off anything that...
these ideas and these concepts about who you are and where your history is and your relationship to others, all others. How do you pass that along? You said you talk to your granddaughter and you talk to your daughter, but you're not sure whether she might be not be listening, but she might be hearing you. So I know that I picked up some regalia of yours from your daughter, and she handled your regalia with much respect. And so I'm interested in how overtly are you passing things along? Is it just things that she is seeing you do that she understands? Tell me how that passes.
I think in her case, when she and I started being connected to our family, with the people that eventually became our family in Minnesota, we would travel to powwows together, and she would dance. She would. Regalia was prepared for her, or, you know, loaned to her to use. And so, even though she was 8, 9, 10, 11, you know, she was young. She recognized from what you're telling me. And I know she does. I mean, she recognized, you know, how that there's a protocol. There are ways that you're, things that you're supposed to do and things that you're not supposed to do. And I think she's got a strong moral sense. But that was I guess, a way of passing it along. She also, one of the stories I didn't tell you was that back when we were kids, we were sent to summer camp in Vermont. It was a group of camps, a group of five camps. Each had a different focus. And they were run by Quakers. The camp I was sent to, my brother and I were sent to, was an Indian camp. And for 2 months, we lived in the mountains, very isolated. We lived in teepees. We learned a lot about Indian culture, about song and dance and regalia and living survival in the woods. And we would go on long hikes and canoe trips and survival hikes where you were out in the woods for 3 or 4 days with little, you know, that little more than, you know, matches and a blanket. But it was during those, and I probably went to this camp for maybe 7, 8 years every summer, from probably the time I was 10 or 11 to 16 or 17. And everybody in my family has gone to these camps. The camp I went to was all Native camp. There were girls camps, all boys camps. There were camps that did a lot of hiking. There were camps that did a lot of work projects. And Nyla went. You know, she was probably the second generation, I guess. Yeah, the second generation to go. And I think that it was, as part of these camps, she was also exposed to a love of nature and challenging oneself. I can remember she wrote me a letter about a hike that she was about to take, and she knew there was no way she could do it. And then afterwards, she wrote this letter, and it just talked about how, you know, she was amazed to be at the top of this mountain and looking and seeing all this vista, you know. And I think that it's in her, you know, to respect Mother Nature, to recognize the relationships that exist between people and with nature. She just doesn't. She doesn't evidence it in the same way I do, I guess, you know.
You've spoken of the connections made with the family in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Are there these same types of connections with your family in Tennessee area, with the Native people in Tennessee?
Not as much. Not as much. You know, a lot has been done to Native people to... you know, people have to survive. People have to survive, and people have different strategies for survival. And I know you know this. You know, many people hid the fact that their Native blood was part of them, and they just wanted to blend in. They just wanted to blend in. You know, not everybody in our family, you know, I'm not going to say they don't recognize it. They don't live it. Mm-hmm. You know, as I have chosen to. Mm-hmm. You know, my brothers and I have gone through ceremonies, naming ceremonies, sweat lodges, things like that. But I just feel like probably because my family, many of my family members are very, very much into the church, very much into established religions. Their spirituality has been directed along very traditional paths. On the other hand, I think that my spirituality has taken a different turn. I would like to say mine is probably more expansive because it includes all those traditional values, going to church every Sunday, you know, Wednesday nights. That's all fine, but there's a larger, for me, spirituality takes on a much larger role in my life, to the point where, you know, I don't see that much of a separation between my spirituality and my daily life, and I try not to have that separation. I've seen so many people who, you know, doing all kind of dirt on Saturday night, and then, you know, Sunday is supposed to be cleansed, I guess. I've just chosen a different spiritual path than, you know, what it has been more traditional, particularly for Black families, mm-hmm. you know. And I find it interesting that I have two aunts who have also had a very broad spiritual path. One is a Baha'i, mm-hmm. you know, and so it's just odd because when I listen to them talk about their church upbringing, which was very hardcore holiness. I mean, fire and brimstone, you know. But I hear my aunts talk, and I listen to them, and they talk about how Daddy, my grandfather, who was a minister, even though he was preaching fire and brimstone, he still could be accepting of other religious views. Mm-hmm. And I like to think that it was because he was also in the woods and of the woods and of the, you know, of the land. So I don't know. I guess it's a circle that meets itself in successive generations. You know, there are those in the family who are very very focused in their belief, you know, in terms of, you know, fire and brimstone and heaven and hell and the consequences of, you know, this or that. But at the same time, there are others in the family who are in the same generation who have this broader perspective. And I guess I'd like to think, at least, that continues in successive generations. I need to be in church, and I recognize that. But I don't only need to be in church. I also need to be in the woods, because that is all. I'm in church when I'm in the woods. I need to be on the water. I need to be in the mountains, because I'm also in church when I'm there. So anyway.
And you said you're telling some stories to your granddaughter, and that she seems to kind of connect with native things and native music. And is this your daughter's daughter?
Yes.
Okay. And is that okay with your daughter? That it may not be coming from her that her daughter is learning about nativeness, but it's coming from you. And is that okay?
As easily as she lets me. Here, take her. No, I shouldn't even say that. That's a family inside joke. But
Go.
But I'm real open with Nyla. I mean, I don't keep any secrets when it comes to that. If we're going to a powwow, you know, I don't sneak and take KT, my daughter, my granddaughter. And just coming up in a couple of weekends, we're going to go up to Indianapolis to the Indian market up there. And I think Nyla is really open to Nyla, to Kinsley being exposed to this. I'd like to think that Nyla understands that it hasn't hurt her at all. You know, it's not going to hurt KT. It's going to only strengthen her. And I think that Nyla has an appreciation for our family legacy. She doesn't always, you know, reflect it in the way that I would. And I guess I shouldn't expect her to. But I do know that she is well aware. And is very conscientious of it, even though she doesn't show it the way I might like her to, or the way that, you know, she goes to powwows, but she, you know, I don't expect to see her out in the circle dancing. But Kinsley seems to love it. Mm-hmm. And as long as I can, you know, expose Kinsley to that, I will. And I think that's okay with Nyla. My gut tells me it's okay.
You dance as well?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What tradition do you dance?
I am a traditional dancer.
Southern?
No.
Northern.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can do both. Mm-hmm. I've done straight dance dancing. I've done grass dancing. I've done fancy dancing, but I prefer the warriors dance.
And where were you, or how old were you when you were introduced to that? Tell me about that.
Part of...
was that from the camp?
That was probably from camp, and I was probably 9, 10 years old. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I was 10, 11, 12, I won several... national contests, dance contests, and traditional, you know, junior traditional dancing. And I sang on a drum, and it was just natural. And I think that there was not, my brothers have danced as well.
You have two brothers?
I've got three brothers. And at least two of them have danced.
Mm-hmm. No sisters?
I have a sister. Yeah. And she is she's a trip too. she's very proud of our native legacy. She's one of those fast-paced New Yorkers, though. Now that she's been in New York forever, but she's very proud. She's very, very proud, and all of us are. All of us are. That's one thing about our family, that we within our family we're diverse, but at the same time, I think those core values of that come from having roots in the Tennessee mountains are just there. They're just there. They are just there. And they show themselves. Even though, you know, we're spread out now from Atlanta to New York to California and all points in between. And, you know, we're traveling the world. My aunt has traveled. I don't know who knows where all she's gone. But I haven't. My first cousin was an airline attendant, so she was all over the world. Mm-hmm. And one of my cousins is works for the CDC. She ran the research farm there. Is a veteran veterinarian. Mm-hmm. and a U.S. Army veteran. And so she's traveled the world. My brother's traveled the world. He's a retired lieutenant colonel. So we're out there, and I love it because all of us are active. We're doing things, and then when we come together, we always have these wonderful stories to share. And
is there something that I haven't asked about that you feel is a real integral part of the story?
Well, for me, I guess it's all connected, of course, but the real integral parts of the story that are so important to me are things that I can't really talk about. There are things that get shared. There are things that get experienced that you have to, that it takes time sometime to figure out how, you know, what does this mean, and how, you know, you're changed by the experience, but how you're changed and how you evidence that change may take time, you know, to bear out. And so I guess I see myself as a work in progress in many respects, because I have been so blessed. I have been so blessed, and I've got, I feel that blessing every day, you know. And so there are ceremonies that you go through and challenges that you give yourself that help to shape you, and that help confirm that the Creator is with you, and that help give you a sense of power and responsibility, and learning to use that power in a proper way is critical. Learning how to accept people as they are and where they are, you know, while at the same time helping them to move to a better place I don't know if it's part of leadership. I don't know if it's just part of being human and caring about other people. But I do know that our family has been really blessed, and we have hopefully been a blessing to people and to the space that we're occupying, you know, at this point in time. But I look forward to experiencing new things all the time. And when I go to Minnesota, or when I go to Tennessee and I'm in the mountains, or you know, I'm fishing, or I'm hunting, or I'm hiking or camping, or you know, if I'm at a powwow and I'm in the circle, or you know, I'm in a ceremony in a sweat lodge, or I'm in a, you know, another setting with the pipe and the prayers and that come with that. It's always, for me, just so it rejuvenates me. You know, and I think that rejuvenation is really important when you come to a place like this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
I hope I haven't rambled too much.
No.